I was having an influence on how the buildings were operating, on the materials and things like that. I felt like I had a much higher impact through this kind of specialization than I would have had with the same level of experience and being more of a generalist. You can easily kind of bridge that gap between cutting edge, most sustainable thing, and what has the biggest impact, what will meet the needs of the project, and do all of that within a budget and a schedule that is required. And that's one of the things that's challenging and fun about architecture.
Hey there, it's Angela, and I'm so glad you found your way here to architecting. Creative careers can be stressful, and it's hard to be vulnerable, but this is your landing pad for raw honesty. I'll help you get clarity, reconnect with your passion, and have the career of your dreams. If you're ready to make a difference, have an impact, and say bye-bye to burnout, stick with me and let's get architecting. Hey, Bright Lights, welcome back to Architecting. This is our Earth Day edition, and I am really excited to have with me my colleague, Tiffany Broyles-Yost. Hey, Tiffany.
Hi, Angela. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's so exciting. Tiffany and I have been working together for a few years. She's the Director of Sustainability and Resiliency at GBBN, but she's had a really amazing career trajectory working at some very big name firms, dealing with a lot of things at the forefront of sustainable design. And I thought it would be really amazing to have her share her story as well as what makes her so excited to keep working in this field. Maybe we could start with your origin story. What made you want to be an architect, and what led you to the direction your career has taken now?
I came to architecture not so much as you often hear famous architects where they were artists or from a fine arts background. It was really more, I liked the idea of making spaces for people. I liked the kind of everyday nature of designing buildings. That was really of interest to me. And while I was at undergraduate school at the University of Kentucky, I had a bunch of really great professors, a couple of really strong women architects who had studied a bunch of places. It was great to travel because architecture has this kind of idea of like traveling and experience cities and buildings. But I also worked with Professor Richard Levine, who had studied sustainable cities, really like Italian hill towns, and had this concept of a sustainable area budget about essentially what a city used and was able to produce. After working with him, I was really interested in making buildings that could work within their environment and weren't, kind of using more and creating cities couldn't sustain themselves over time and that were good for people. So that sort of got me interested in these ideas at an early level. And then later, I had always liked New York City. It's a great place to live if you're an architect. And so after graduating, I moved there. I didn't move there at a wonderful time. I moved to New York on like September 21st of 2001. So it was right after September 11th, but it really felt like a community, oddly enough. So I worked there for a while and eventually found my way to what was Fox and Fowle at the time. And it was a great firm that had done a lot of work in sustainability with Bruce Fowle. That was a great experience, really getting to see behind the curtain and how people were getting these kind of buildings built. The story goes on. I went to graduate school in London at the Architectural Association. It was the only place you could find a master's of architecture with an environmental focus at the time. And then I started working at KPF, another big firm, really getting to apply all of that knowledge to, buildings all over the world, and got to work on some of the super tall skyscrapers, LEED Platinum buildings. And you really had clients that knew that they needed to have high performing buildings that could attract tenants. And so they were asking for that, but you also knew that the market was shifting that way. So in 10 years of working, you couldn't get recyclable ceiling tiles, and then you couldn't not get them, So there was definitely, you could start to see over time a lot of change. It was a really wonderful experience, and I really liked being on the design side. But eventually I worked at Urban Green Council, kind of wanting to affect more of infrastructure of green building and be involved in that. So that was the New York chapter of USGBC. That was a really great experience. I got to meet all the kind of key players in New York City in the green building space as the director of programs and helping the educational components there. And it was fascinating to get to see how people were doing things, how the real estate side, the city government was doing. That was a really good way to learn more about how do things get done besides, oh, I have a client who wants to do this, so they hire an architect who knows how to do it.
I think that's really pivotal that you were interested in this in college, but then you made some really deliberate career and even education choices, deciding to go and get that master's degree that were going to really propel you in this direction. What made you feel so confident in following that passion?
Yeah, I think I was just really curious about how do we make things better and better. For me, if you gave me a blank canvas and asked me to paint something, I would have a hard time like deciding what to paint because it's a blank canvas. There's no rules. You can do whatever you want. But with buildings, there are some guardrails, right? Like it has to stand up. You know, there's structural things. There are just, you have to work within a framework. And so then those kind of constraints lead you to some creativity within those constraints. A big part of that for me was really about how people use the space, how you make good spaces for people, less so about how you make inhabitable sculptures, but how you make things that make life better. I mean, I don't think at 18, I was like, how can I make life better? But there was definitely some notion of helping people. That was always of interest.
I love that you say that because I never did pursue LEED accreditation or anything like that, but I did dive into it a lot from 2005 through 2007 when it was beginning to really accelerate. And I found that to be what resonated the most with me. Like, it's great that we're making good climate decisions, but it's also about improving quality of life because they're interconnected.
Yeah, absolutely. People generally want to make things better at a global scale, but it's sometimes hard to relate to that. Like LEED, if you can talk about like how you improve indoor air quality, that resonates with me right now, right? Whereas energy is kind of abstract. If you talk about the energy side of that, I personally can't readily tell how much energy I'm using at any given moment, but I can tell if I'm coughing and the air is polluted. You know, I can usually get a sense of that. So that wellness side and designing spaces for people, that really resonated with me. And that's kind of how I got started.
It's also really interesting that while you were in New York, you chose to really build a professional network. You were very involved in a lot of things. And I want to kind of touch on this because a lot of times people will say, I'm too busy. And that's the reason why I can go to work, do my job, and that's it. I can't do all of these other professional networks, or I can't be actively involved. But I think it makes a big difference to a career. So I'd love for you to talk about why you made the decisions you did, what you got involved with, and how that really helped you.
I'm definitely a very outspoken person. I'm going to meet people when I go into a place. I like to talk to people. A big part of my interest in architecture was, you know, more from a kind of anthropology and like how people use stuff and how societies relate. When I first moved to New York, right after a massive terrorist attack, you know, the least of New York City's problems was that this new girl from Kentucky was having a hard time finding a job. I started working in a bookstore because I just wanted something to do and I wanted to meet people. And I started volunteering with a women's group because I didn't have any money to donate to anyone, but I had time. And that was a really great way to meet a bunch of different people, get to know the city, and get to know my neighborhood. I lived above actually a really small architecture firm. My first apartment was above this architecture firm. And because I had started talking to one of the women who owned it, we became friends. And she was like, oh, I know someone who's looking, they need to hire someone. And I ended up getting a job, a full-time job through those connections. It kind of felt like once you got to a place and were out and meeting people, that things opened up. It's been that way, I think throughout my career. You get out there and meet people and ask questions because you're curious and you want to know people and know about their lives, and it makes your life richer and often turns into opportunities to do business because people like to work with people that they like.
And this really helped you to cultivate industry expertise, specifically around sustainability and resilience.
Yeah. So having had a little bit of exposure to that as an undergrad through working with Richard Levine and the Center for Sustainable Cities, I had a kind of interest, particularly sought out now FX Collaborative, but was Fox and Fowl at the time because of their work in green buildings. And so I learned a ton there. They had a green team, and just all the senior leadership at the firm and all the other young people who were there. I also started going to a lot of the Urban Green Council events because while you are really busy, you don't move to New York City to like sit in your apartment. Your apartment's tiny to begin with, but you're there to be out with all the other people, many of whom have moved from somewhere else. I was just constantly learning new things. After that kind of specialty in grad school and starting at KPF as an environmental specialist, I found a lot of times LEED was obviously the kind of primary way that we talked about sustainability. And I would think, I don't necessarily know more. I'm just the person who looks it up. But being the person who would look it up in the book and figure out how to do it meant I was learning how to do all that. Just doing the work starts to give you that expertise. And that was great.
It built a good foundation. Now, it definitely led to other opportunities for you. And I love that you never said, who, me? You know, if you were given an opportunity, you're like, well, sure, I'll jump in and do what I can.
Yeah, well, particularly at KPF, the person who hired me, it wasn't like an official role, but he led their sustainability effort. And he actually left the firm within like 3 months of hiring me and, you know, was kind of joking about it because he was like, sorry, but they eventually had someone within the firm to kind of take on that role. But for a while, it was me. So I was answering everybody's questions. And then when the woman that kind of was leading that effort left about a year after, I was kind of handling all of it because people were already sort of coming directly to me. Eventually, after she left, I was head of sustainability because they just didn't see a need to bring in somebody with 15 years of experience because what I was doing was working and I was connecting with the other staff and we were getting things done and it was great. And it made me learn really fast because you had to, because you were kind of jumping in and I would be in meetings. I would have to explain what you didn't, weren't just passing things off. So that really made you have to know it if you had to tell the story.
By raising your hand, you start to get opportunities and you learn by doing. And it's not about ego. It's just about, I care about the issue. And by putting the issue first, it's amazing what you can get done because you're not afraid anymore. Because it's not about, look at me or how great I am or how much of an expert I am. I'm contributing where I can. And that adds up to so much more than you think it would over time.
You know, I really felt like I was having some influence on the buildings in a way that I wouldn't have had as a young designer. You know, I wasn't shaping the buildings aesthetically, but I was having an influence on how the buildings were operating, on the way the materials and things like that. So I felt like I had a much higher impact through this kind of specialization than I would have had with the same level of experience and being more of a generalist.
But it still is risk though, right? To
yeah.
say, okay, what am I giving up in order to do this? But also to say, I'm going to follow my North Star no matter what, and it's going to work out.
Yeah. And that was a big, a tough decision when I went to grad school because I was at a firm that, you know, I really liked, and I actually delayed grad school a year after being accepted, deferred, because I was like, oh, we got this great project. I'm really going to learn a lot. It was a risk, but it worked out. Pound kept going up and the dollar kept going down at that time. So I'm glad I went when I did, because it just seemed like every day my tuition was going to be higher. But it worked out really well. And I felt like I came back. I had an expertise that I had developed in grad school that I could apply straight away. And I was lucky at KPF. I had only been there a year and a half, 2 years. And I was getting to go to job interviews with Gene Cohn and Bill Pedersen. You know, their names were on the door. And that was such a wonderful learning experience to see them talk to clients and work to win work. That was huge. I was really appreciative of that opportunity.
That's amazing. So let's talk about what happens next and how you continue to be a voice in the industry, but also how your career begins
Yeah.
to keep unfolding.
I was kind of interested in trying to have a bigger impact. And so I was working at USGBC, but eventually I went to the consulting side because, again, how do you get on these bigger projects, infrastructure and thing? And I ended up working at AirUp, which is this huge engineers, designers, architects, consulting side. And that was really good to see that large scale. And I think the wonderful thing about AirUp was that there was an expert in every topic. You could find something very, very specific and find that person. But the clients who came to AirUp, whether they were cities or massive projects, they were all looking for sustainability. They were coming, they knew this, had this great expertise. And I think that was really great. But I was kind of ready to basically find where that wasn't the priority and see how you could help move not just the cutting edge, but the rest that wasn't necessarily looking for it or didn't see what buildings can do for them. That also coincided with a kind of personal move and relocating out of New York City with my family and moving to Kentucky. Fortunately, those things all kind of coalesced at the right time and led me to GBBN, which has been really great.
I love what you said. It's privilege when you can work for the Arabs of the world and the clients are coming to you specifically for the work you want to do.
Right.
But that is such a small percentage of all the work that's being done. And so, really saying, okay, I've learned what I can learn, but now let me try to take this to where it's not so in demand. And I think this is where a lot of people listening can really relate. Clients have maybe a very limited idea of what sustainability is, that they don't want to pay a cost premium, that they'll say yes until it feels too risky and they're doing something they don't feel is tried and true or dependable technology or whatever else, and then they back away. I know it's been challenging, but I think you also bring a really great pragmatic point of view to this that has been so helpful.
Well, thanks. I feel like it's really important to listen to what your clients' priorities are, listen to what they need. My assumption is typically that everybody wants something good and wants to do the right thing. We just might have a little bit of different perspective on what that might be. You can easily kind of bridge that gap between the cutting edge, most sustainable thing, and what has the biggest impact, what will meet the needs of the project, and do all of that within a budget and a schedule that is required. And that's one of the things that's challenging and fun about architecture is that it goes back to those original constraints. So I think that working within that is important, but was a challenge because in New York City, it's very easy. Land is expensive, energy is expensive, and that's not the case in the Midwest. So you have to kind of think about it differently. That was really interesting, moving back to Kentucky and Cincinnati. You had to figure out how to talk to people about it differently because that math wasn't already there.
It's also interesting. GBBN has supported LEED for a long, long time. And our CEO, Matthew Shottacotti, brought you in. You were the first of, now we have three different ones, firm-wide practices. So the idea was that you represented all of our markets as a resource, but it also meant that you had to create protocols for a
Yeah.
firm. I always think anytime we try to standardize things at architecture firms, we're all creative people and people are like, I'm not doing that. And they do whatever their
Yeah.
system is, or it's just not part of how the project process is already set up. How did you begin to implement some of these things as just standard operating procedure? And then how did you try to take it and up-level it so that we were beginning to be more visionary with it?
It was tough because there was a learning curve for me as well. I had worked in this region before. There was a lot for me to learn about how to translate some of the things that I took for granted in, like I said, a market that had high energy costs and huge amounts of competition. First step was really getting to know the firm. In this case, the firm has had these kind of goals for a long time from the grassroots and has been trying to figure out how to do it for a while. But it does take a lot of time because you have to understand the way that the different teams are working and the different markets. So, you know, in our case, we have higher education, we do a lot of healthcare work. And so you're trying to figure out where the benefits are and where the costs are. For example, not just literally financial costs, but with a campus or with the healthcare system, they're there. They're owner occupiers, essentially. So some of the things you can do there, you're figuring out how long the investment is, if there's a kind of split incentive, meaning like the benefit doesn't go to the person who puts the money in. So for a lot of those things, it really does come back to the health and wellness side that we talked about, you know, Angela, because I think that when you can center it on the people, that resonates much more than if you're talking more broadly about big environmental issues. And so that's definitely been one of the things that I think we've focused on more in our firm. On the developer side, it's a different ballgame because it's primarily about like the capital. And so if you can figure out how to make rent times shorter or keep tenants longer, those are benefits. But you really have to listen to what drives the conversation and then figure out which levers you can pull. And internally for the firm, when you have those small successes on the project, you really have to share it widely. I found at places I've worked in the past, that sort of internal sense of competition really helped everybody get better. And so when you could come back and be like, oh, look what we did on this project, you know, it got lead, whatever, and really saving all this energy and the pictures look great and the staff is happy. And so sharing that then is like, oh, they did that on that project? I want to do that on my project. That helps get policies in place when you can do that.
Yeah. And I also think it's a little bit of, you know, we reach for the highest branch we can see. So when we see that someone can do this,
yes,
now it doesn't feel so scary or so risky to do it yourself.
The other thing is really trying to set up visual communication. How do we make a diagram that shows all the strategies? And don't take any of the simple strategies for granted, like efficient appliances or low flow plumbing fixtures. Like you got to note all of those too, because you have to recognize the low hanging fruit as well. And then set it up in a way that's like the next team can come in and say, okay, we can do all those things. And they've shown us what it looks like when we communicate it back to the client. That really helps get the ripples happening throughout the firm.
And I think it's cumulative. Like you said, once you set up a process, you can replicate it. So now your energy can be on the next thing and
yeah,
you sort of begin pulling it all together. One thing you have really done is to try to make sense. There's a lot of different certifications out there. There's
yes.
Well, there's Fitwell, there's LEED, Passive House. There's also the ideas of what are we trying to do? Like you and I have been working a lot on equity and equity's ties to resilience. And how does all that impact? How does somebody sort of make sense? Because it can feel overwhelming when you're in this channel. There's so many different things coming at you. And do you sign up for that 2030 challenge? And what about the AIA's principles and all of that?
That's a good question. It sometimes can be so overwhelming that you just freeze because you can't make a decision, right? It's been helpful to connect with other people in the firm, like you, for example, Angela, because you had been pushing a lot of this work on health and wellness and how buildings impact your health and well-being. And so connecting with people who are already doing it has certainly helped us move forward. But when you have so many options, I try to get us to ask the right questions so that we can sort of figure out what we're going to prioritize. And then that can sometimes help you figure out, okay, is there then a certification that we want? But mostly, are we asking the right questions so that we can move things in the right direction for this project? Is the focus about health and well-being? Is it about operations and energy use and conserving water? We try to figure out where the priorities are so you can say, okay, we're going to focus on these things and then we're going to add the other aspects around equity and community engagement in, but our primary focus is going to be a healthcare building. We're going to be focused on the well-being of our patients and our staff.
And it's less about the certifications then, although another thing that you've helped people to do is really to understand that there's a whole bunch of certifications and coach them into which ones they should do. So Passive House has been one that we've got a lot of people excited about lately. That's a newer certification, but part of why you've encouraged people to pursue that is because it's very aligned with what a lot of our clients are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have now 13 certified Passive House designers, which is a large percentage of our staff. Whether you're certifying a building as a certified Passive House, which is not just for residential, the concepts that are part of Passive House design, some of that can be applied across all of our projects. So that's been something that we've really been focused on for Passive House. How do you make something really well insulated, right? Like how do you take a thermos, which is well insulated, right? And how do you apply that concept to a building? We can have good windows. We can have high insulation. We can have good details in all of our buildings. So we're trying to figure out what are those things that we can really roll out across all of our projects, whether they're certified Passive House designs or not.
It's helpful, you know, not just because you were able to build this within one firm, but how you could sort of take the things people were interested in doing, help them see how becoming an expert, cultivating that expertise, getting the certification to prove it, which much like getting your license at all, it matters. It matters because it's not just the knowledge, it's the proof that you have it. And then being able to apply that in different scales, but by consistently applying it, you develop libraries of details or philosophies. And so it gets easier the more you do it.
I learn the most about the things I'm interested in and passionate about. So from my perspective, within the firm, within our firm, and really within any firm, if you can help people become the expert on the thing they're most interested in, that's a great way to start. So like within our firm, one of our colleagues has really been interested in mass timber. So he's sort of developing that knowledge. We have someone else who kind of specializes in facade. You are the master of salutogenesis. We have other people who are focused on Passive House. We have other staff in addition to you who are really focused on, you know, design for well-being. You learn the most about the thing you're interested in, and you don't have to be miles and miles ahead of people. You just need to know a little bit more and be willing to find out. And like when I first started working on lead projects, you have to be willing to gather the information and then share it back. That's been successful, I think, within our firm.
As you've done this, another thing you touched on that I think is so important is the power of collaboration. And you did this throughout your career, but most recently, not only have you helped people find their expertise and really pull that together, it's like conducting a symphony, right? Where you're pulling the different pieces, but you even collaborated to use the IRA funds and the calculator for that clients can use and start to see the impacts of different decisions.
We were really excited, you know, when this piece of legislation was passed. As much as we wish it didn't happen, clients are often saying, well, I don't have the money for that, whether it's 1% more or, you know, 10% more. So we felt like it was important to really understand exactly how the incentives would affect our design decisions. And we also wanted to make sure that our clients weren't just coming up a little bit short, like slightly meeting the threshold and then not being eligible for all of this funding. So we worked together within a few members of the firm and really were getting into the nitty-gritty of the law and took all that knowledge into this giant spreadsheet, which, you know, no one wanted to look at. And so we eventually worked that into this online tool that you can go in and you can say some things about your projects. You answer a few questions, a little bit like a mortgage calculator, and then you get a range of numbers that show you, there's this tax deduction, tax credit, et cetera, if you have PV or if you have heat pumps, et cetera. And I think what's really great is that it was really important to the firm for us not to just keep that knowledge to ourselves and for our clients, but we released this publicly because we want to make sure that people are taking advantage of this money, whether that's while they're hiring us and using our services or not. So that's been great. Anybody can go on to gbbn.com and look for the IRA calculator and check it out.
This has been a great conversation. What has really emerged is how you can become aware of something that really excites you. You can begin to make choices, even very early in your career, that put you where you are poised to acquire expertise, whether it's through your work and mentors, professional organizations, even choosing to go to graduate school.
Yeah.
And then you can also, once you feel like you've acquired a certain amount of expertise, you can begin to have impact with it, moving that needle for the everyday project, inspiring more architects who are used to clients saying no more than they say yes to keep pursuing. Putting the right tools in place, it begins to really tell a story and have impact over time, which is what I love most and what I hope people can really take away. Earth Day is about raising awareness. Doing it at a smaller scale sometimes doesn't feel as exciting, but it's actually often where you have the biggest impact.
I've been really fortunate to have good mentors, good leaders, ones who are open to if you're interested in stuff and if you reach out, whether you're an extrovert or whether you're kind of going to them privately to say, I'm interested in this, I want to know more. And that's made a huge difference. So if you're interested in sustainability and there's other people within your organization who are the expert, go up to them by all means and ask how you can help and what you can do, because they will most likely be willing to help. And that certainly helped me. I'm thrilled to be here on Earth Day because it's always fun to get to talk about this. And hopefully our conversation, we see some other people who are in the same boat and can kind of expand their presence as well. Been fun. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much for sharing your career path. I think seeing the sausage making, that it isn't just like, oh, I have this title and look at all the things I've accomplished, but that it's really the willingness to put yourself out there, the willingness to say yes to opportunities instead of I'm too busy or who am I to do this and second guess yourself, that gets you to where you are.
Yeah, definitely. In times where I was in a situation that I was not sure if I was ready for, I can remember one person saying, well, we wouldn't put you in the room if we didn't think you could do it. And I was like, okay, fair enough. You're with all these other people and they're senior and they said, we're going to have you do it, then they have confidence in you and take advantage of that and go for it.
If people want to reach out to you, what's the best way to connect?
You can find me on X, but you can also just reach out directly, email me at ebroyles, Yost, at gbbn.com. You can find us on the webpage too, LinkedIn.
All right, great. And everyone, definitely reach out to Tiffany if you had any insights or ahas, or even just have a passion of your own for sustainability and want to get a little bit more insight into how she did it. I know she would love to hear from you.
Yeah, sounds great.
Take care. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. If you want even more content, head on over to architectingpodcast.com and subscribe to my newsletter and get some great free downloads while you're there. Be sure to follow me on social media, on Instagram at Architecting Podcast, Facebook and LinkedIn pages are Architecting, and the YouTube channel Architecting Podcast. Stay inspired.